Hey there, friend. Life is too short to be beaten down by crazy curveballs, stress, and drama. Want to de-stress, choose joy, and get healthy? If this sounds like fun, you are in the right place. Let's get inspired by experts in happiness, health, and wellness to create the epic lives we all crave and deserve. It's time to lighten up, ladies. Let's dive right in. Welcome to the show today. And if you saw the title to this episode and hit play, you are my kind of woman. You rock, and we could totally hang out together. It also counts if you somehow automatically rolled into this episode or decide not to hit skip or play once you know what it's about. And definitely you get bonus points if you share with a friend. Because if you listen in on the show, it means you're either ready to become aware of all of your lovely lady parts, including your vagina and pelvic floor, or you're interested in learning more about how to stay healthy and active in every way possible. Because it's not just about being sexually active, although it's obviously important, but also it's about staying active in general, feeling confident, having control of your pee and your poop for the rest of your life, and just feeling overall like you can do anything. So today's guest is unique in that she talks about the body-mind connection between the pelvic floor and our emotional health. Her name is Alyssa Alter. She identifies as a she and her. She is also known as the Amy Poehler of vaginas because of her unfiltered determination to change the narrative around female experience. Integrating her eclectic background as Broadway performer, a personal trainer, and coach, Alyssa's work guides you back home to yourself with a sense of curiosity, potential, and possibility. Alyssa is the author of Unstuck, From Understudy to the Study of Your Undercarriage, and host of the podcast Alter Your Life and Myth of Motherhood. She is also the co-founder and head of content at Postpartum. It's a media platform revolutionizing the postpartum experience. Alyssa believes that if we as women spend as much time, energy, and discipline on our insides as we do our outsides, we will be unstoppable. It was so much fun recording this episode. We ended up laughing a lot because she's able to make something that can be uncomfortable for some people to talk about actually kind of fun. So I hope you have fun listening too. I hope you learn a thing or two and listen in toward the end to learn about how you can strengthen the pelvic floor with an easy exercise you can do almost anywhere. And I'll come back with some takeaways afterwards. Hi, Alyssa. I am so excited to have you here today because you're going to talk about a topic that I really, really want people to know more about. And so I was wondering if you can introduce the topic and also how you got into working with women on this.
Dory, thank you so much for having me here. And it's true. Today we are talking about one of my favorite things to talk about. And I like to talk about everything, but that favorite thing is, drumroll please, the pelvic floor. Dun, dun, dun. Which, I mean, it blows my mind how many women that I speak to who admit to me, because I really am like, I do not believe in TMI, and I am a 100% judgment-free zone. So how many women share with me that they did not know what the pelvic floor was until after having a baby? You are one of them.
Right. I mean, first it was like WTF, and then why didn't anybody tell me? And then I can't talk about it, right? Because it's
oh my God, because we're not supposed to say vagina. Yeah. Oh my God, right. You can't say vagina or have a question about it or have had a baby and then suddenly it feels like you can't express, you can't be sad or upset or hurt or grieve because then that reflects you as a mother and they're side by side. They are individual things. Like, okay, so how did I get here to be this like, this is on my Instagram. It's a testimonial from someone and I've run with it. Alyssa, how did you become the Amy Poehler of vaginas? Because I say that. Vagina and I make jokes to bring some levity to the topic because it's heavy enough. So I've always been a dancer. And when I graduated college and I came to New York to pursue musical theater, I got my Pilates certification so that I didn't have to wait tables. And I had a very successful career as a Broadway performer. I was teaching Pilates in elite gyms and boutique studios around New York City and around the world, because when I would leave and do a show on tour, I would guest teach places. And so I started really seeing, I think it's like the placement of our pelvis really kind of drives everything. And then I had a back injury and my PT was becoming certified and to specialize in pelvic floor dysfunction and become a pelvic health PT. She was like, I think this might have to do with the pelvic floor. I was like, tell me more. So then I started diving into that and studying with physical therapists, speaking with OBGYNs, doing all sorts of research on my own, because there really isn't a lot of like unified ways to learn about how the pelvic floor relates to our physical body and to our emotional body. And my work had been progressing in that direction because as I was sort of finishing up my career teaching in studios, working for someone else teaching Pilates, I started finding it very funny how people would come into the studio and by the way that they held their body, the alignment of their pelvis, all of this stuff, I knew so much about them. Like you're type A, you're type B, you struggle with control, you don't feel like anyone listens to you, you don't feel like you have a voice. Like you can see this in the physicality. And I just thought this was something so interesting. And then I started a company, Pilates for Your Privates, focusing on pelvic health, because I really just thought this was such trash that, I spoke to women who had children who didn't know that urine came out of a different hole than the baby. I don't say that those people who didn't know that is no fault. We are not taught about our bodies because as women, we are taught to not talk about it. It's to be secretive. We're to be ashamed of it, embarrassed. This is dirty and disgusting. How many products are there that they sell to us to clean it up and make it better? There's a whole passage in Eve Ensler, who now goes by the vagina monologues, about all those products to make it smell like flowers and perfume when it's supposed to smell like a vagina. And those are pheromones. I don't know. That's a whole other thing. Anyway, and then I had my son and I had a fourth degree tear, that's like vagina, perineum, which is between the vaginal opening and anus, my anal sphincter and my rectum, all tore. So I say I had a rectovaginal birth. It was horrible. And the physical pain was horrific. I don't recommend having stitches in your two hole if you can avoid it. It's extraordinarily painful and terrifying. But the worst part was how it showed up emotionally for me. And I felt like a failure. I felt broken. I felt like a failure as a woman. I felt like a failure as a leader, as a teacher, as a mentor, because here I am working with people on pelvic floor dysfunction and preparing them for childbirth and recovering postpartum, which all my clients saw great results. And then I tore my butthole. Like, how could this be? And it was through that healing process that I am filled with holy rage about speaking about women's health and speaking about what actually happens in our bodies. Because whether or not you give birth to a child, these female experiences are these female experiences. And people don't tell you what's going to happen postpartum. And people also don't talk about the fact that the hormonal shifts postpartum, you might recall the night sweats and vaginal dryness. And if you are lactating, breastfeeding, or pumping, your hormone levels stay at a certain level that then your muscles are smushy and it feels like it's really hard to even regain any sort of strength. And all of that mimics menopause, which no one's telling you what happens postpartum. And I kept saying to people, we're screwed when we get to menopause. This is all going to happen again. And no one's giving us a heads up. And that is not fair. And it makes it so scary.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't know your story. So thank you so much for sharing. And it's true. I mean, I just launched a course called Food, Moon, and Menopause. And they don't do a lot of studies on women's bodies. A lot of the things we know are about men's bodies, and they treat us like smaller men. And so they're not really paying attention. And with gynecologists, I mean, they're learning about fertility because that's where the focus is. And so when you get to menopause, it's really about medicating it. There's nothing you can do about it. Oh, you know, you're just aging. When I had my prolapse, they said, you just, you know, there's nothing you can do. You just need to wait for it. Wait for what? I mean, like, at the end? Wait for the end? Or what are you talking about? What's the punchline here? So nothing you can do. That's really what I got.
That's something that was so upsetting to me and actually really is what was the driving force between my launching my first podcast, Myth of Motherhood, which I more recently stopped releasing new episodes of that and have launched my new podcast, Alter Your Life. But what made me move towards that first podcast and co-found the platform Postpartum with No Vowels was that exact thing that you were talking about, that they just say, oh, that's normal. Oh, that's normal. This, it's common, but this is not normal. Peeing in your pants when you sneeze is not indicative of normal or optimal muscle function. That is indicative of muscular dysfunction. Something's not working right. And what's really cool about the muscles of your pelvic floor is that they are voluntary skeletal muscles, just like your biceps or your quadriceps, right? Or your abs. Like, they are muscles. So you can stretch them. You can engage them. You can change them, right? Like, this isn't just, oh, deal with it. That's fine. You have prolapse. One of your organs might fall out of your vagina at some point. Just stuff it back up there and carry on. Maybe put on a tampon. You'll be fine. No, my insides are falling outside. That is concerning. And I have reason to be concerned.
Right. That's an actual thing. And women are so used to being comfortable that they kind of adapt to it and they, you know, okay, well, I'm going to wear a liner or something like that. But it's not something that suddenly reverses itself, and it likely is going to get worse if you ignore it. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I think something within that, and this is related to any injury, and pregnancy is an injury. Childbirth, however that happens, is an injury. Is that the recovery is not linear, and it often takes longer than we think. It is absolutely longer than 6 weeks. I would say we should move that benchmark to a year, not for your first doctor's appointment, but just for your, like, you'll be back to your normal activities. We'd need to move that to a year. But yes, leaving these issues unresolved. Now, I've worked with women who, you know, they come to me and they've been peeing their pants, you know, if they sneeze, if they cough, if they're out dancing, if they have alcohol or caffeine, because those things are bladder irritants. So listen, it's going to complicate things no matter what. But when their children are in, their youngest are in middle school or high school, and we can still eradicate the problem, because again, these are muscles that then have gotten into a certain muscular pattern, so it might take a little more time to rebalance everything because we're changing the deal on them and these muscles have gotten comfortable in their patterns. However, as we age and our hormones shift, we lose muscle mass, and again, our pelvic floor is skeletal muscle. So that's part of the muscle mass. So making sure to still intentionally be working through those muscles or paying attention specifically to what you need for your alignment, for your pelvic floor to maintain optimal function throughout whatever movement you do, becomes more important as we get older. For certainly, listen, we're not talking about aesthetics, but also for optimal function and, like, as we get older, quality of life. You know, standing up straight, getting on the floor and playing with your grandkids, like, you know, older, but also before getting there, like going out dancing and not being worried that you're going to pee your pants, having sex with your partner and not being worried that you're going to accidentally fart because you can't control your anal sphincter, or like, am I going to pee on them? You know, we don't, unless that's like a sex thing you're into and you and your partner are consenting to it, we don't want to be thinking about that during sexy time. Again, unless that's your thing, in which case, great.
That's true. Different show. That's right. Yeah, for sure. There are so many questions that came. One is, vaginal birth and hormonal shifts and menopause, those kinds of things. Are there any other things that can be causing damage to your pelvic floor?
Oh, yes. Also, cesareans, which I hear often from people. I don't understand why I'm having pelvic floor dysfunction. Why am I having such painful sex? The baby didn't even come out of my vagina. And I'm glad you asked this, because I wanted to clarify this before too. You know, when I work with people and in my online courses and anything that I do surrounding pelvic floor work, I think it's very important that we zero in and isolate and make sure we know, okay, what is that muscle? What does it look like? Yes, I'm saying to look at your own anatomy. And what does it feel like to focus on different areas? But what's most important is integrating that into global movement, would be like the clinical term. But like, it's all cool if I can sit here and like engage my anal sphincter and then my urethral sphincter. But what do I do when I'm out hiking with my family on a lovely weekend? You know, if I'm actually moving, and maybe in ways that are unpredictable, how do we translate that knowledge into actual functional movement? That's the most important thing. Really putting it into practice. But, and with that said, all of our, like, to get woo-woo for a moment, you know, everything is connected. It's all connected. So there's fascia, which is like the saran wrap that surrounds all of our muscles, right? That runs down the abdomen and down into and through the pelvic floor. So if there's tension in your pelvic floor, oftentimes there's also tension in your abdomen, and it can also extend into your lower back as well. So pregnancy is putting a lot of strain on everything, right? It's all overstretched and freaking out. But then the surgery for a cesarean cuts through that, which is an additional trauma to the fascia and the muscle tissue, that then in the healing, like picture saran wrap. Like, if we have a piece of saran wrap and we're holding it up, and then I take a very sharp little knife and I make a cut in the middle, it's not going to be clean, right? The whole sheet is going to react. And then if I took a needle and thread, I mean, they don't put thread inside you, but whatever, and then I stitch it up, by the time I finish, that sheet of saran wrap is going to kind of be a hot mess.
Mm. Yeah, right? That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to pull on all of the things, which is why it's really important to connect to your pelvic floor after a C-section, and why it's important, for multiple reasons, to massage your scar and mobilize that scar tissue. And you can think of it as like ironing out all of those wrinkles. And where I think we can get stuck also is believing that this is just how it is now, and it can feel like this is how it'll feel forever. But we are adaptable. So the same way that tension is new, you can make it better. You can iron things out again. And there's Okay, I'm gonna get woo again, but I can't help
Oh,
it.
this is a woo. This is a woo space, so it's okay.
Because again, this is all so connected, right? And so, okay, so wait, I'll get there in a moment. So, C-section is another thing that can affect your pelvic floor. Hormone levels, absolutely. And that can be from as we, like, that can happen during adolescence. The way that our hormones work can create a level of vaginal dryness or sensitivity that can then perpetuate things into a case of vaginismus where there's an involuntary spasm of the muscles. So they're too tight. So then we have young women unable to tolerate any type of penetration. So tampons, anything sexual, it's a do not pass go. Absolutely not. And then, of course, if there's a history of any type of sexual abuse or sexual trauma, right? Like these are muscles. This is a very intimate, sensitive area of our body that is also directly connected to our autonomic nervous system. So, like from caveman days, right? If like a tiger is about to eat me and I need to run away, right? Heart rate goes up, pupils dilate. Muscles tense, I become like a loaded spring to run, and all of your sphincters close for two reasons. One, I don't have time to stop and poop, right? If I am outrunning a tiger. And two, if I poop, now I've left a trail, right? So this can happen from anything stressful. So I'm also saying this because, like, we're over 2 years into a pandemic and the world just keeps falling apart. So, like, probably a lot, like, everybody.
We're all running around with our sphincters and things closed right now, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And like, right now, this is an invitation to like unclench your butt. Like, just let your butt go. Cause we're probably all clenching our butts because why wouldn't we be? It's not safe. Like,
That's right.
so. This really, there's a really strong connection to the function of these pelvic floor muscles and our emotional state and our sense of grounding and our safety. And when it comes to the pelvic floor and pelvis, this is also where our first and second chakras are, which are all about safety and grounding and security and stability. And if we don't feel safe, you know, everything's going to hold on for, it's like all white knuckling things. As a result, it's like the chicken or the egg. Like all of that can tighten, and then I'm going to be in a more elevated, stressful space as a result of that physical tension, because my body's like, well, we're doing the stressed thing, so I guess we're stressed, and vice versa. So there can be a stimulus that's stressful, and then my body responds. And then they just keep feeding each other, which is so fun.
Yeah, big feedback loop. And like you said, everything's connected. So when one thing goes off kilter, it starts, things start armoring up and you have referral pain and all these other things start happening. So yeah,
Yeah.
that's really fascinating. Hadn't thought about it that way. Yeah. So
And then I will obviously touch on how to get out of this loop.
yes.
So don't like, and for you listening, like we are not going to leave you here. But you can also see, and this is like, you know, the work that I do in all of the content that I create and my courses and everything is really live at this intersection of our physical and emotional fitness and wellness and how these are informing each other, and they're not separate. It's all connected. That, you know, being caught in that loop, right? Of course, that affects how we show up in the world and how we feel about ourselves and how we show up in our relationships, and then how that can affect our relationships and just sort of snowball from there.
Right. Well, as an example, going back to what you had said in the beginning, you were saying that you can tell by a person how they carry themselves and move a little bit about how they're feeling about things, how they perceive the world, something about their lives. Can you explain a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a good example. Like, because I want to give an example, and I also like these are generalizations, but I don't want to like tip over into like stereotyping too much. But you know, I'm picturing the first thing that's coming to my mind is like, I did work in a space where there were a lot of very, very successful businessmen in their 60s and 70s. So, you know, and I would sort of paint that as, from what I have observed about what that human experience looks like as a woman who is still in her 30s, that it's sort of a transitional time where you can see them still having some of that real, like, young, like, virility, but also starting to their grandparents now. Like, they're, you know, things aren't working exactly how they used to be. And these men would come in, talk about a clenched butt, and so tight and rigid physically. So just so I'm like, I'm currently clenching my butt. I'm clenching my abs, like pulling my shoulders in, just like you barely turn your head, just so tight and stuck like the Tin Man. And it's this inability to release, this inability to surrender, this clinging to something, the fear of change. And I say this with no judgment, like that's just scary, you know? And any point in our lives when we have this shift in identity, you know, it is a chance to expand, but when you expand, you have to leave some stuff behind, and like, there's gotta be space to grieve that. Yeah. I hope that was a good example. I also like,
yeah,
you
that
know,
makes a lot of
also
sense.
It was a man, not a woman.
That's okay, because if you think about even just getting into that posture you were describing, you can, I mean, what your body, how your body holds you impacts how you feel and vice versa. So when you were describing that, I was just thinking, whoa, that's feeling trapped and rigid and stuck and needing control, but feeling like you're going to lose it if you just give a little bit.
Right. And what's so interesting, this is something that like, I just love to nerd out about is that, right? Like, and it is that it's that desire for control and to hold on to it and maintain it. But really, in order to maintain control and stability, you can't be rigid. And I think of like the Space Needle in Seattle, like there's movement to it, because if that were rigid, strong winds would come and it would fall down. So we have to have that balance of engagement and surrender in order to actually have stability, which is different from rigidity. And that is something that I also talk about a lot in terms of our pelvic floors, because when you think Kegel, right? Like some people squeeze their butt cheeks. Some people just squeeze a sort of general area right there, where really for a healthy muscle, any muscle, your bicep, your abs, your pelvic floor, your puborectalis, whichever one, a healthy muscle can contract and release. It's not just one or the other. So it can't be a limp noodle. That feels very funny that that's the one I went with, because it's like a flaccid penis. I didn't plan that. That just happened. I want a flaccid vagina, but we also don't want like a steel vagina, right? We need pliability. We need options.
Right. That makes sense. So I hear that people are actually doing exercises the wrong way, because there's just one thing, as you were saying, you've got to have options and variety. So if you keep doing one thing, you're actually not creating balance. And so when people are sitting there just doing Kegels, there's a lot more to that, right? So in terms of you know, helping people through it, this is really fascinating, because it sounds like you're talking about the mind body and how this is affecting all areas of your life, and people really aren't aware of that kind of thing. I mean, honestly, we're not even trying to pay attention down there, right? So
that's not happening. That is not here, except like when we want it to be or when we can't ignore it, you know? And that's, I mean, and that's really very deep conditioning, right? And I think that there's, you know, that's patriarchal stuff and like things that have come down and permeated and evolved in different ways to keep us from feeling comfortable or safe or knowledgeable in our own bodies. And then to also keep us from talking to each other about it. And that's something that I've really realized is the benefit that I think people see in my work is that I have lots of women's stories, right? And I don't name people. I'm not here to, you know, that's not my place. However, I can tell you, like, you're not the only one who has questions, and there are no dumb questions. And the number of people who have asked, so wait, like, my pee does come out of a different hole? And it's like, yeah, yeah, it's a different one. And sometimes actually that can tear during childbirth because people think the tears only go back. They can go out to the sides. They can go front. You can tear anywhere. You know, but even just that kind of like fluency in our anatomy and what we can expect throughout the course of our life. I mean, to me, that feels like an act of suppression as women. Because if we don't know ourselves, then we remain dependent on someone else. And that's not, I'm not saying that by looking in a hand mirror and looking at your vulva, you don't need to go to the gynecologist. You do. You want to go to a professional and have things checked out. But then that was something that was very empowering for me after my birth experience, because before my 6-week checkup, I took a look at myself. I wouldn't do it before then. I wasn't ready. And then I figured before my 6-week appointment, if I had an absolute breakdown, they could medicate me. Like I could go there and like be having a panic attack and they could sedate me. And what was amazing was that I felt way more confident going into that appointment because I had specific questions because I know what I looked like before. And I was able to say, like, is this what 6 weeks after having a baby come out of your body looks like? Or is this because of my tear? Is this something that's wrong? Is this? And there was some comfort and sense of not just control, but empowerment and autonomy in that. That I had information too. I wasn't only dependent on an external source.
Right. It's right. How can you address something if you don't even know how to talk about it and know what the parts are? And that's one of the things I was surprised about. Most women don't know what parts there are and haven't looked and don't want to look and feel really squeamish and uncomfortable about it. How do you help your clients, people who come to see you, get past that? What are some steps people can take to get comfortable?
Well, one of the ways that I help people get past it is that I talk about it openly and honestly, just like this, everywhere I go. Like in articles that I've written, in my podcast, in my book, like just talking about it the way I talk about like my belly button. Like this is another piece of our anatomy and really normalizing that. And that's education and exploration is really the basis of what I do and all of my work and how that shows up. And so I have an online course available that's Pilates for Your Privates Foundations 101. And it's really about learning about what are the pieces? What is the anatomy? How do they work together? How do they work separately? How does the way that you stand and where your weight is in your feet, how does that affect the health of your pelvic floor? Because it does. A lot of my work focuses on breathing, because if we breathe all the way down into our pelvic floor, when you inhale, I'll say more about that in a minute. You can, through your breath, engage and release your pelvic floor, which we talked about healthy muscles engage and release. So you can tone and stretch and strengthen and quote unquote work out your pelvic floor by breathing intentionally. And I actually have in July, I have two things coming up that can help support people who are curious about this. And one is an 8-week experience called Move, where we will move. There is video content, there's education around your pelvic floor and movement and our nervous system. And how do we move through that feeling locked, feeling stuck, not knowing where to turn? And the first step to creating change or altering your life is one step. And I'm also publishing my second book, Pelvic Floor 101, which breaks down all of this stuff about the pelvic floor and my breathing techniques that I have, you know, taken from various places with really fun illustrations done by my friend Annie Moore, who's an artist, of the pelvic floor, which is, you know, it's the pelvic floor, but fun. And so if it's cool, I would love to share sort of like a basic breathing exercise that you can do anywhere that will support your pelvic floor, whether you have a situation where there are times when the muscles become hypotonic and it's harder for them to engage and they're too released. I have found in my experience working with people, I see more people who are hypertonic and the muscles are too tight. But that's my experience. That's not all of them. But this is supportive either way. So wherever you are, if you're standing, if you're sitting, I want you to close your eyes and then shift your weight from side to side a little bit if you're seated and feel each sit bone. And you can do that if you're standing too, feel the weight on your feet and then settle in the middle. And then rock your pelvis forward and back, kind of like cat-cow. And notice, so like when you're sort of more in cow pose, your butt is sticking out behind you. And when you're in cat pose, your butt is curling underneath you. And the, we'll say the middle point between like your pubic bone and tailbone would be your vagina. So then settle in a place where your vagina is pointing straight down. So now that diamond of your pelvic floor, the diamond created by each sit bone, pubic bone in the front, tailbone in the back, is horizontal, right? Parallel to the floor. Vagina pointing straight down. So now you inhale, close your eyes, inhale, and feel that diamond widen. As you exhale, lightly resist the diamond narrowing. That creates an active stretch for the muscles, and muscles love those. Inhale and widen that diamond. And as you exhale, just very lightly resist the natural narrowing of the diamond. And see if you can have some control, some say in what's happening. And do it one more time. Inhale, feel that increased space. And as you exhale, you hold on to it as much of it as you can as you exhale until you fully exhaled and there's nothing left and that diamond is as narrow as it's going to be and you have no other choice but to inhale again. So by doing this, when you inhale and widen that pelvic floor, you're stretching those muscles in a way that's also communicating with your nervous system to tell you that you're grounded, you are safe, you are secure. And as you exhale and follow the narrowing, you're allowing the muscles to engage in a mindful, intentional, purposeful way that, again, tells your brain, I am safe, I am grounded, and this activates those chakra points, and you get all of these benefits just by breathing a couple times with your vagina pointing down and the diamond widening and narrowing.
I love that. You can do that anywhere. You can do that in the library. You can do that at the cafe. You can do that at the stoplight.
I do it on the New York City subway, right? I do it. Another trick that I have that I love is my husband doesn't love this. I set my alarm a little bit early so that, like, for one snooze, and I breathe like this and meditate for that snooze.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So then I've done it. Right?
And that's it for the day. Yeah. So this is good for hypertonic and hypotonic because it does both. And it helps you become aware if you're not aware, like, what? I can't control anything because it's awkward, right? In the beginning.
Yeah, and it's exactly like going to the doctor. Like, we can't do anything with it if we don't know what is, if we don't even know what's happening or where it is or what it feels like. And we just have to start exploring it.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I also would love to offer you and your listeners, I have a free 5-minute meditation, guided meditation and breath work that you can do. It's 5 minutes to get started, right? And breathe intentionally and find that space in your body, connecting your insides with your outsides, because I also really believe, again, this is about that intersection of physical and emotional fitness, that especially as women, if we spend as much time, energy, and discipline exploring and training and building our insides as we do our outsides, that we really will be unstoppable.
Yeah, because we spend so much time, well, not everybody, but a lot of us on the outside. It's almost like we don't know what do you like? What makes you happy? What brings you joy? And you hear crickets.
Yeah, but we can answer that about our friends and our family. But what about,
Right.
yeah, and that's, it makes me think of like when I walked into that 6-week appointment, I was like, no, I'm armed with questions because I know my body. That it's even like to walk into a restaurant and be like, no, I know I want spaghetti and meatballs tonight. Like, I don't care what the specials are. Like, I don't know, there's kind of a power to that.
Right. Take your power back and know yourself so that you can, if you don't know yourself, you can't get what you need, and other people won't be able to do it too. You just kind of get what you get as a result. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You don't get what you need. You just get what you get. And someone else has decided that for you.
Right. So then life is happening to you if it's a series of those kinds of experiences. So, yeah, that's fascinating.
I was going to say, and it might not all be bad what you get, but it's probably a lot of it's inaccurate.
Right. And if it's good, then why not get more of it? And the only way, really, to not
Yes.
by accident is to know, first of all, and realize it, and then ask for it. I love that.
Yeah.
So if a person comes to work with you or somebody who knows, like, how do you work online? Or if somebody wants to find somebody locally, how does that work? And then how do people work with you?
So I'm based in Brooklyn, New York, and so I do work with some clients in person in Manhattan. I do a lot of work virtually, and I am very upfront with the fact that I am a doctor of nothing and I am not a physical therapist. I love physical therapists, and I often help people. I'll do like an initial call with someone to make sure that if they need to see a physical therapist first, that they do that. Because otherwise, this work will only get so far. Because also, especially a pelvic health physical therapist, they can do manual therapy that is invaluable. And if that's really what your body needs and that kind of assessment and getting that information first before we work together, we got to do that because that'll streamline the process. And if you're feeling uncomfortable or unsafe or insecure in your body, like, let's get rid of that as soon as possible. Like, let's move, right? Like, let's improve that faster. And so I do work with a lot of people after PT and in that transition back into their full life when those or in tandem with physical therapy. So utilizing what the therapist has assessed and their tips into our movement. And again, we use the physical movement to support what's happening emotionally. And we also talk and utilize other practices, breath work. I will give you journal prompts. I will sometimes make you journal in front of me. We will have a dance party if needed, and other types of, I say homework, but I keep it very reasonable, supportive, more like integrating habits and rituals and practices that actually integrate into your day that reinforce you paying attention to yourself throughout the day. Because as women, we don't remember to do that because we're so focused on everyone else, which we can still do that, but like we get to be there too.
Yeah, I really like that. As a health coach, I introduce something new to integrate it with something that's a part of their life already, not something where they have to
Yes.
drive somewhere and just take themselves out of their environment, but something that is integrated into what they're doing. So it's a seamless approach, like what you were saying about the breathing.
Yes.
You don't have to go close yourself off in a room. You can if you want to, but you can do it in the in-between times. It's not something that you need to derail your life over, and it's accessible.
Yeah, and when we integrate it like these smaller changes, they really become sustainable. And that's how you create substantial change, is through that consistency. And I agree. Because the thing is, like, I'll say, I'm like, it doesn't have to look perfect, but it has to happen. And if I, especially if I'm working, you know, with, like, we're busy. We have a lot going on. And I'm like, okay, your homework is to take an hour and a half every day. And you're going to journal for this. It's never going to happen, you know. But if your homework is to write a post-it note that says, where is your vagina pointing, and stick it on your refrigerator, so every time you go there, you check in with your physical alignment and just see what you're up to, that's great. And that can create really, really meaningful change through these small pieces, right? Because, I don't know, we don't have the bandwidth for these, like, huge, like, I can't wake up tomorrow morning and be vegan. That's just my go-to example. Not, I don't have anything against being vegan, but, like, let's one step at a time, you know?
Right. It sounds like a lot of what you're saying, too, is about mindfulness, presence, like just knowing, paying attention, and that will make some changes happen, because you'll begin to sense, and at some point, maybe because you have an awareness, then you'll be more aware, catch yourself more easily, you'll become more automatic catching yourself so that you get into the right posture and not getting into the habits that start causing the domino effect of imbalance.
Right. And physically, and again, emotionally, like, I've found that, I always preface this with, my husband really is, he is so kind and compassionate and thoughtful and considerate. Like, he's incredible. And he will say things like, oh, hey, can I just get 10 minutes to myself? And, like, I'll be with our son. And I will feel this surge of rage. Right. And I kept noticing that. And I'm like, that's really, like, what is that? Like, he's not just disappearing. He's checking with me. And I realized what was happening was, I was really jealous at how easy it was for him to do that.
Interesting.
That I didn't feel like I could be like, hey, can I just get 10 minutes? And that was on me. That's not because he would say no. That's my internalized conditioning. So I noticed this other pattern. And so then I said to him, I admire the ease with which you do this. And I'm super jealous about it. And I'm going to try to do it more. Like, I actually am going to try to be like, I'm going to try to learn from you, which totally reframed this other thing, which is part of, like, a much bigger narrative that, like, you know, men are the worst. I don't know.
Right. Well, it's that thought, really? I'm allowed to do that? I'm allowed to ask for time to myself? I mean, it's just, I think it doesn't occur to people or ladies to do that.
It does, because we have been conditioned to not do that. And that's, I think, something that's, like, really cool that your work is doing, my work is doing. And I think as women, we are really stepping into this shift that, no, we're not just going to ask, like, we're going to ask and then accept, you know, like, we're going to ask and then we're going to do it. Like, we're going to let you know, we're not going to be jerks about it unless you make us have to be jerks about it. But, like, we are really going to enact change.
Right. And it starts with just an awareness and knowing that you are allowed to speak up for yourself and have boundaries and know what you need and talk about it. So,
yeah. And when you do that, like, that shows, this goes back to, like, you know, talking about this stuff. And when you do that and your friend sees you, then maybe she's like, I could just do that. It's like, yeah, it's awesome. It feels really weird the first time. And then it just, like, people are like, oh, okay. And you're like, why wasn't that a big deal for you? That, like, took a I had a very big internal pep talk. And then that becomes what you do. And you model for, if you are a parent, you're modeling that for your children. And that's even huge. If you're not a parent, there are other people around you who are seeing it, who it ripples out.
That's amazing. So when you talk about going back to functional, when you say functional movement, what does that really mean? When you say functional movement,
I mean moving and exercising in a way that is supportive to maintaining your body and your ability to do the things that you want to do pain-free and with confidence. So rather than, and you know, my background in like Pilates and yoga and dance, like especially Pilates, it's so ab focused that people, like I used to have people coming and be like, I want a six pack. And it's like, well, here's the thing. Like you could do a million crunches, but if like one, it's not in your genetics, and two, you eat salt or drink alcohol or have fun, you're probably not going to have one unless there are people who are, who genetically have them and don't work for them, right? Like that's, to me, again, like, I mean, I'm not saying we don't care about aesthetics. Like that would, we live in a society, that's another deeper, that's a topic for another day. But functional movement in terms of like, sure, that I look in the mirror and I really like what I see, or I put on a bikini after having a kid and I'm like, hell yeah, I look awesome. And I can do somersaults with him at gymnastics class, and I can jump on the trampoline with him and I don't poop in my pants, even though I tore my butthole. Like that to me is more functional movement.
Yeah, not just like working on one thing or focusing and taking things apart, but as a whole person in life. Why need to be out there? Why need to be active? Why need to be able to be mobile and just enjoy things without having to worry about?
Yeah. And like, hurting. You know, I think like spot training was very popular for a while. I think it's lost some, but it's like, you know, the thigh gap, the blah, blah, blah. And like our whole body, right? It's all connected. So it's a team. And so, yeah, sometimes you do need to check on each team member to make sure they are doing their job, right? And do they need a little help? Are they injured? Do they need some backup? What does that look like? But then you honor the whole team, and each member has their strengths and their weaknesses, and that's what makes it a great team. So we don't ignore the individual part, but it's always in favor and in service of the whole. 'Cause like, I don't know, like we only get one body. And so, especially as women, the way we're conditioned, like, I don't want to be in a fight with my body for my whole life, right? And just because like, just because CrossFit was cool for a while doesn't mean I need to do it when I know that's not going to be good for my body, or like that that's not something that is aligned for me, like even though it's the coolest thing.
Yeah, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine. And women spend an entire lifetime trying to force their bodies to be something that most of us weren't meant to be, or some yeah. standard that keeps changing, or, you know, who makes up these rules, right? But it's so from the beginning of our existence that we don't even know. And when you start looking at these things and thinking, oh, this will be easy to change, I'm just going to eat this food and not label it bad, or, you know, fattening or whatever it is, it's kind of hard to actually apply when you start doing those things. It should be easy, but you don't realize how many of these like ideas and standards and rules we have in place to keep us or try to get us to something that's unobtainable.
Yeah. And that again, like was decided for us because we weren't in a position to make that decision for ourselves. And that's like, again, that mindfulness and intention is like noticing when that comes up and just kind of checking in and being like, is that something, like, is that mine? Do I believe that? Or is that someone else's that I've been holding on to? And what do I actually think? What do I actually believe? And I mean, it might be quick and just being like, oh yeah, wait, I don't agree with that. Get out of here. Here's, and other times it may take a while to sit with, wait, where did that come from? How has that shown up over my entire life? You know, but it all starts with that awareness, and we don't need to judge it. Just need to see what it is. Get the information and then hopefully do something good with that information. We're human.
Makes sense. Yeah, it all goes back to everything is connected. And when I started working with physical health, I realized you can't get well without addressing the emotional, even spiritual. And it mm-hmm. is interconnected. We separate the two, and yeah. making sure that you're treating the person as a whole is going to make the biggest difference for sure.
I think I totally agree. And I think this is important for men, but I think this is absolutely crucial for women, because we have been taught to absolutely separate from, dissociate from, ignore our intuition, like our inner knowing, things that we know to be true because they don't fit into the patriarchal norms because they weren't created by women. So if the things that we know are, they were not built for us. And to actually connect to that, to move towards connecting to that, to be curious about connecting towards that, to that, and learning about that, I think is like such a revolutionary act. It is such an act of resistance, like that you are advocating for yourself and all of the women that came before you, all of the people to come that were pushing back against that. Like it is, it's really time for us to come together in ourselves and each other.
Absolutely. I love the word that you use, revolutionary. I've been thinking about that a lot, and it's true. Just rewriting the script and actually taking it back and empowering ourselves for now and generations to come.
Yeah. I love what you just said, like that empowering ourselves. No one else is going to give it to you.
Absolutely.
You know, like we can guide you and again, just create that space where we can start to explore this very foreign thing in a way that we can embody it and know that we are safe, because out in the world, it isn't safe for us to do that. So we can create these safe spaces to do that. And I feel like that's definitely one of my big missions is like, yes, explore it, because, and it feels weird and it feels foreign and you might freak out a little bit or be like, ooh, that's because it has not been safe, but now it is. In this space, it is. Here on this show, this is a safe place to do that. Ooh, I just got chills. We're going to change the world.
I know, me too. Oh, yeah. It's like you said, when you speak about it and you're comfortable, you are normalizing it. And it gives, as you said, other people, other women permission to do the same. And so, yes, revolutionary. So with that, how can people find you?
Oh, there's a bunch of places you can find me. The most central would be my website, alyssaalter.com, or Instagram at alyssaalter. And I also have my podcast, Alter Your Life. And if you are in the throes of motherhood, you won't want to miss out on Myth of Motherhood and our media platform, Postpartum with No Vowels, PSTPRTM.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. I feel like there's so many other things you had said. This is for another show. I'm like, yes, there's so many different things.
I'm a talker. Oh,
well, me too. So that's probably why we have podcasts. Ulterior motive is to talk and share, right?
And thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, absolutely.
I really appreciate it and have loved chatting with you. And
such a joy.
Yeah, we're changing
the
world.
Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you. Okay, now that we've normalized talking about the vagina and the pelvic floor, let's get into a little more of the details. What is the pelvic floor? The pelvic floor is a group of muscles and ligaments that support the bladder, uterus, and bowel. The openings from these organs, the urethra and the bladder, the vagina from the uterus, and the anus from the bowel pass through the pelvic floor. Alyssa says that the placement of the pelvic floor drives everything. So that means alignment, proper alignment is key. And I've been a body worker for over 13 years, and one of the things we learned is to watch people and their structural alignments as well as how they move. And so if your alignment is off, then the movement of your body continues to create wear and tear, much like your car and how the wheels wear out unevenly if you don't get your tires rotated. Yes, I just compared the woman's body to a car. So since the pelvic area affects everything from the waist up and everything from the hips down, it's important to make sure that the muscles are in alignment and all even and supple and strong to support not only the skeletal muscles, but also all the organs that it holds. As I understand that the pelvic floor is like a basket that holds all the organs in place. And so of course, when you have problems with it, then things start to shift around. And that's why they call it a prolapse. And I'm definitely not an expert. This is how I understand it.
And anyone who has studied chakras, like yoga teachers and Reiki practitioners, both of which I am, know that the pelvic floor and vagina are in the first chakra, which is connected to feelings of safety, tribal connection, feelings of belonging, basic survival needs. So if that chakra is out of balance, then it affects your ability to feel safe and secure, whatever you're doing and wherever you are in life. So it's interesting that the pelvic floor impacts also your vagus nerve, which is the longest nerve that runs through the body and touches all the organ systems. And it's very intimately connected to the autonomic nervous system. And because of that, it affects your fight flight versus your rest and digest response. So that's how all of that is connected. And isn't that fascinating? So as Alyssa mentioned, some of the potential causes of pelvic issues include childbirth. And I was surprised to hear that C-section can have something to do with it. But as she described it, it makes perfect sense. Other things that can cause pelvic issues include exertion, constipation, and menopause, so aging, because of the loss of elasticity, collagen, and blood flow. It's been said that your likelihood of having pelvic floor issues increases by 50% with obesity, and also hysterectomy, chronic coughing, and also collagen abnormality. Symptoms of pelvic floor dysfunction include pressure in that area. You feel it's kind of achy and heavy, and you sometimes feel like something is about to fall out, and sometimes it actually does. Isn't that scary? Also, frequent peeing, and then maybe sometimes feeling like you need to pee, but there's nothing going on. And then maybe you pee on yourself when you laugh or sneeze, just it's involuntary and you can't control it. Sometimes maybe when you're going to the bathroom and you think you're done, but you get up and all of a sudden you're not done. And then constant bladder infection, constipation, kidney stones, and also because it involves your anal sphincter, it also can show up as uncontrollable flatulence. And I've read that 1 in 3 women will have to deal with some form of pelvic dysfunction in their lifetime. And as Alyssa said, there are physical therapists that specialize in helping women with these issues, and Alyssa works alongside physical therapists or afterwards. So I hope this information was helpful, and let's start revolutionizing the normalization of these types of conversations. It is a matter of improving our quality of life and ability to stay active and vibrant as women. And as Alyssa mentioned, the pelvic floor is a muscle. So while we're being told that there's nothing can be done about pelvic floor dysregulation or dysfunction, we can strengthen those muscles and see improvement. And Alyssa also said that there's no magic lotion or potion. Sometimes it just takes time. So be kind to yourself and find the right support. And along those lines, if you'd like to find out more about Alyssa Alter, you can find information about her in the show notes. And don't forget to check into her online course that she's just releasing in July that creates a sense of community around self-care and includes taking care of your vagina and pelvic floor. It's called MOVE, and it's an 8-week program to learn more about your relationship with yourself and to your body. She also shares a link in the show notes about a 5-minute meditation to start your day off with confidence and ease. So I hope this was really helpful. This is our longest show yet, but I hope that you had a lot of fun. And as you know, time flies when you're having fun. And until next time, lighten up, ladies.